Well, today is Tuesday, June 11th, 2019. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners at 9 a.m. Chair Lily Morgan is not here today, but Commissioner Fowler, Commissioner DeYoung are both here. So item one is a Rogue River Watershed Council presentation, which is Brian Barr, the Executive Director. Please come have a seat, sir.
Thank you. I was wondering if we've got our board vice chair, Terry Ryder, if she'd like to come to
the... Please.
So she can be up here close and personal.
Right. Visible support. I love it.
Well, thank you, guys. It was about a year ago that I was in front of you last time. This is a requirement that we have by the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. But I think it's a really good idea for us to touch base on a regular basis anyhow. Why don't you take one too, Terry?
Yeah,
you should know
for Lily when she gets back.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
That one's already handled. Oh. We took care of that a couple months ago.
That's pre-meeting.
So I'm just going to really quickly kind of walk you guys through what 2018 looked for us, give you a little preview, even though we're almost halfway through 2019 at this point. And then open things up to question. Commissioner DeYoung, I have not lost the fact that last time I was here, I told you I was going to walk down Gilbert Creek with you.
Well, I think somebody's been doing that because there's some flags down there.
Oh, good.
I was going to ask you if something was moving forward or not, because there's little flags that looks like they're trying to establish where the bank was at one time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
On both sides, all the way down from Midland, I think, goes all the way to Saturn. So,
okay. Well, not by us, but maybe, you know, at some point I will get in touch with
somebody's
you.
Somebody's making noise down there.
you and I can get out there. So just a couple of things, and this will be about 10 minutes, I think, if it all goes according to plan. Just because we've got a few new faces here, and just in case y'all or you don't remember, Watershed Councils funded through the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board were something that kind of came about in the mid-90s when, at the time, Governor Kitzhaber and the commissioner for ODF&W and the Department of Environmental Quality were staring at a bunch of potential listings of salmon and steelhead species around the state and water quality conditions in streams around the state that were showing lots of impairment. So the idea behind Watershed Councils was for sort of with state investment to try to energize local folks to take a hand in trying to address some of the habitat concerns and water quality concerns in their waterways. The Rogue River Watershed Council works on about 50% of the Rogue Basin from about the Curry County line up to Crater Lake, not including the Illinois Applegate or the area around Sam's Valley. A couple things that I think we've been particularly successful at in the last 4.5 years, building local partnerships, developing on-the-ground projects, and generating support from local partners, agencies, and foundations. A couple of things that I think we've struggled with and are trying to still figure out is how do we really engage the communities in the area? We've got the 8 largest communities in the Rogue Basin in our operating area, which is on a map on the next page so you can see it. But we haven't been particularly good at engaging individuals yet, and as a result, we don't have a lot of local investment in projects beyond the people that we're working with on the ground. The third page has that map. The first, the next page of your handout shows some summary statistics from our outreach events. This is one of the ways we try to engage locals. We did have a reasonably successful event right on the banks of Gilbert Creek back in April. We'd like for attendance to be greater, but that's a celebration of World Fish Migration Day. We had about 75 individuals come to that event here in early 2019, and about the same amount back in 2018, which is really what I'm reporting on here.
It'd
2018.
Be nice, though, if you guys request better weather.
Well, you know, and we hold
last
it in.
Year was rain and wind.
Pretty hard.
This year
pretty
was
hard
rain.
To check Gilbert Creek when it's up. You know,
when it's raging. Yeah, yeah. The event is at a tough time of year. We do it in April, sort of on purpose to coincide with this international event, and it's not the best time to do something in the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, we'll try for better weather next year.
Okay, early, that first weekend in April, if you could get some sunshine and maybe moderate temperatures and not
No
rain, flowing horizontally.
April showers.
That's right, you got it.
Something I heard.
Anyhow, you can see we took the lead on about six events in 2018. About 730 people came to those events. We participated in nine additional events that generated close to 1,000 people to come to us. There's a little summary of some individual events there. We do send a newsletter out. I think you guys get a couple copies to about 400 people. Last year, we took folks on two different hikes, one down to Rainy Falls when the salmon were migrating. That's always fun. And the other one was to up in Jackson County at Tecoma Gorge. We're doing a lot more hikes this year, and we're kind of trying to get people out and exploring the watershed and trying to figure out ways to communicate that with them.
Tecoma Gorge is in Jackson County?
Tecoma Gorge
is. Of course it is.
Because we have Tecoma, you have Tecoma, the town. The gorge is way up by Union Creek.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
What are some beautiful spots to hike up there?
Yeah, it is. It's gorgeous up there. At the end of the year in October, we have a celebration. We got about 180 people that. It's kind of our one way that we do local fundraising, successfully at least. I guess I should just say, just because it just happened, on Saturday of last week, we had an event in Shady Cove. We helped some Shady Cove folks organize an event, and 600 people came from Prospect in the Shady Cove area. Maybe a couple, we dragged a couple out from Eagle Point.
That's awesome.
That was pretty impressive to see that many people. I mean, that's the, a fifth of the population of Shady Cove that turned up to that. So that was really great. Yeah. We had a lot better weather for that
one. Oh, yeah. It was a beautiful weekend. But last year we had similar weather to ours, and they had 300 people out. So,
golly. Double. Sounds like a community thirsty for an event.
Well, Grants Pass, you guys have a lot of stuff going on here in town. I think it's a little tougher to compete. Shady Cove doesn't have much to draw folks in. So,
That's cool.
It was nice, and we'd love to see even half that many come to that World Fish Migration Day event. We'll get there. Well, we might have to rejig or something. So anyhow, page three is that's just a map that shows you kind of our territory. Hopefully this is the last time I ever say this. Rogue River Watershed Council came. There used to be nine councils in the Rogue Basin. We are the result of a merger of four of them, including the Middle Rogue, which is that sort of northern third of Josephine County there, extending up Grave Creek. So about 20% of our overall operating area is in Josephine County, and somewhere around 30% of Josephine County is within our operating area.
Do you want to say anything about the group formerly known as Seven Basins?
I don't, but if you would like to say something, I'd be happy to hear what you have to say.
Well, the Seven Basins Watershed Council had been struggling for a few years. So last fall, they officially disbanded that Watershed Council and formed a new one that seems a lot more energetic and a lot more enthusiastic. And
same name? Or?
No, it's... No?
Valleys of the Rogue is what they're calling them.
Oh.
Valleys of the Rogue.
Yeah, I knew clever. As soon as I said that, I was going to remember the name. I can't remember that.
Yeah, and they're really in that formation stage. It'll take them a while to probably get some energy, but I think that's probably a good thing for them because the Seven Basins Council had sort of lost energy, so... The next page is just that same map, and it's got some orange ovals on it, and those kind of show, we've got 1.6 million acres in our operating area, and in order to move the needle on water quality and habitat improvement, my belief is that you kind of got to concentrate those efforts in a few spots. So within Josephine County, we're trying to concentrate on that Wolf Creek, Upper Grave Creek, Coyote Creek area. The other places where we're focusing on energy are Elk Creek up by Lost Creek Dam, the upper end of the Little Butte Creek system along Highway 140 there, and then kind of the urban, southern part of the urban center of Jackson County, that Ashland to Phoenix stretch of Bear Creek. Not coincidentally, those are places that, everything but that Bear Creek system have reasonably intact coho salmon populations, and we tend to see that a lot of our money comes from working on coho because they're the endangered / threatened species protected by NOAA fisheries. So money tends to be a little bit easier to come by when we're talking to agencies and foundations when we're working on coho.
Does that one oval by Elk Creek and Lost Creek up there include the, not fishery, what am I trying to say? Hatchery.
It does not. Well, I mean, we don't work
you don't really
with or on hatchery.
That. Okay.
We're working on in-stream habitat stuff. Okay, so, gotcha. We do work a lot with ODF and W, but not with their hatchery stuff.
Gotcha.
I would throw out there, because I know a lot of these creeks are really small, and sometimes you say, well, you know, why are you working on those? We're in the 12th year, I think, of sampling Jones Creek. We put out fish traps, which are boxes that catch the flow. Water goes through them, but we catch whatever comes in from April, middle of, or end of April through the middle of June. Somebody's out checking every day, catching baby fish, and they usually take a week or so to start showing up, but we've been getting, we got 33 yesterday, wow. 32 a couple of days ago, 100 last week, they got 120 some odd last week. So there are a lot
on
of...
one day last week.
Right, so that's all one day. Yes, each one, each day. So there are fish making it up, they're spawning, and we're getting babies back down. So even these little things that aren't as white as this table produce fish. Those are primarily steelhead.
We used to have steelhead right below my house.
Uh-huh. No kidding.
And then...
At Gilbert.
Yeah, Gilbert.
On Gilbert Street, yeah.
And then they had a fire at Bentwood Furniture, mm-hmm. and they put it out with mechanical foam.
Oh.
Mechanical foam picks all the oxygen out of the water, and of course, as they're just washing it off, got into Gilbert Creek, and I have not seen a fish in Gilbert Creek since. Really?
You need to go down to the Central Avenue crossing.
Okay. That's my neighborhood.
They're
come by my house.
There.
And then they had a fuel oil tank leak. And you could smell the diesel. If I, diesel isn't very combustible, but if I'd have flipped a match in it, I think it would have gone up. And that wiped it out. And then whatever's coming through the storm system, whatever comes through the storm system, rotted out the bottom of a pipe, storm drain pipe on Hawthorne, and they dumped that right into Gilbert Creek. But yet, if I go down there and pick a blackberry, out
you
of the riparian area, I get a fine.
Yeah, you're going to get shackles.
So I don't, you know, I keep an eye on the creek, and it's more algae than I've ever seen it, and it's not, it doesn't look healthy to me, and I haven't seen any steelhead. However, I thought, looking up, looking downstream, my neighbors have not some still water, but it moves in there, and I thought I saw a couple of fish jump in there the other day.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm just not seeing them because they're blending in with the bottom.
I know there's a guy, he's in a wheelchair, and he's got really limited mobility, but he so he sits under the tree at the bridge.
Right.
Oh, at Central Avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I drive by that guy.
Yeah, and he, my husband, our mailbox is right there, so my husband talks to him every day, and he can tell you how many, and they're going up, and you can see they're... fingerlings.
Yeah,
I had steelhead this,
and they're coming up that decent fish ladder on the other side to get there.
This creek right below my deck, and I live in the 1300 block. Okay. And I used to have steelhead right there, no problem at all. But we put in that, you know, and Commissioner Fowler and I were involved in getting that bridge reconstructed at Savage. Uh-huh. And there was a fish element to that. It's what brought the price up dramatically, is because of the fish element on it. But I'm curious as to make sure that thing's working so that, you know, eventually we'll have steelhead. And I and up north of me, one block north, actually two blocks north, was Hodges' house. And he used to see steelhead in his creek. And we haven't in a long, long time. So I'm just curious as to water, I don't know whether it's water quality. I don't know what fish want. I'm assuming, you know, we all look at the fish. I look at fish like dirty water. They don't like clean water.
Yeah, I think the opposite.
They got to eat on something. But anyway,
right?
But
they're eating bugs that like clean water too.
Okay, but anyway, I'm not seeing the fish that I used to. And I don't know if it's just I'm not
and how,
seeing.
How long ago was that when you were seeing adult steelhead?
15 years ago. I've lived there 29 years. Okay. I'm going to say 15 years ago. I haven't seen anything since Bentwood Furniture, and they use mechanical foam.
Of course, every time it rains, the water gets
muddy. It should get flushed. I mean, that toilet should get flushed every year.
It's not clean every day.
No.
Well, right now, if there are a fair number of fish visible. I don't know which.
Well, good. I'm hoping that maybe I'm just not seeing them, but I'm just hoping. I was just curious about that Savage Street crossing. I want to make sure we did no harm with the Savage Street crossing, which I don't think we did, because ODF&W had a pretty
heavy hand in
there. I'm sure they got it.
Okay.
That's great, and thanks for that point, Terry. It is a good one. Small streams can provide habitat for the fishes that we're working with and on, steelhead in particular. Walk through just a couple of the bigger projects we worked on last year. Again, it's all voluntary-based stuff. So we're approaching landowners. If they say, you know what, we're not interested in doing something with you, that's kind of the end of the story. We might ask them again in a couple of years just to see if their minds may have changed. But we're working with folks on a voluntary basis, and we're increasingly trying to work with private landowners. We do a little bit of work with federal and state land management agencies. Eagle Point property, this is a city of Eagle Point. It was their old sewage treatment plant site. The Little Butte Creek sort of jumped its banks back in the flood in 96? 97. It was 96 in the Columbia. So they had about an 8-foot high cut bank there where you see all those engineered log jams. So we sloped the stream bank back, installed those jams to scrub energy when the flows come up. Now that site is planted with a little over 1,200 trees and shrubs. What the city got out of it was that they would like to turn this into a park, so they got rid of that erosion, that cut bank hazard. What we got out of it was some floodplain connection and off-channel habitat. We also engineered.
So did you install all these stumps and rip up that I see here?
Yep, we did. And then once the trees grow in about 20 years, hopefully we'll get some shade on that bank. The total cost of that project was about $240,000. Just a note, some of the figures on these projects extend years other than 2018, so maybe a little bit of expenses in 19, a little bit in 17.
Now, just a question. It's on the tip of my tongue. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, but problem, these sir. Things pop up. Old people need to speak. But I've seen or heard of people using marketable timber as habitat and not, you know, taking it off of public land, for instance, that's publicly owned, and instead of saying we're going to send it to the mill and then we get a portion of that back here, and that portion goes to our schools and law enforcement and parks and things of that sort. Nope, we're dumping it into a stream as habitat. Do we get compensated for the value of the timber that is taken out of the marketplace and put into that stream? Is there some sort of compensation?
You'd have to talk to BLM and Forest Service for that.
Pardon?
You get a clean river.
Yeah, can we get a carbon credit or something?
Clean river is not keeping my school. If a clean river, I can go and ask somebody if they will be a deputy sheriff because we have a clean river, and they're going to go, no, I need to get paid. And there's an awful lot that timber money goes to around here. Whether you like it or not, there's a lot of money that goes that has to feed this machine because we don't have any other form other than property taxes and some sort of revenue, which timber was one of them. But I didn't know if you could take stuff that isn't marketable. Instead of saying, I'm going to take it right out of the log deck and I'm going to go dump it in the creek because that's going to make me feel good. I just want to know if there's any compensation. We say, you know, you dumped 500,000 board feet of value into a stream bed when you could have used something else, a different style log. Whereas here you use this. None of this is marketable.
This is a good
location for that. It's habitat,
right?
In my mind. But I mean, I've heard of some pretty nice sticks that go into stream habitat, and I didn't know if there was that makes perfectly good sense to me.
That's a question for BLM. And, you know, we do occasionally get this kind of stuff from BLM. We don't get any from the Forest Service anymore, but we do occasionally get stuff like this from BLM.
Right.
We're always looking for kind of scraggly. Right.
Well, I'd rather see it here than to be a flash flood.
This looks like,
you know, you pushed a bunch of stuff up in one of these slash piles, and then you let the firewood cutters cut off what this is what's left over. And I have no idea. Right. It looks pretty good to me. Not a problem there. But I have heard of it. I have not seen it firsthand, but marketable timber down in watershed.
Yeah.
And that's a...
You know, we're looking for less expensive wood to put in. I don't think our projects necessarily would want to use marketable stuff because it's going to be more expensive to buy.
Well, that's what I mean.
We're buying stuff.
They're saying, okay, it's just, you know, it's going to a good cost, so we're not going to pay anything.
No.
And that's what the question I had, because we do function, part of Josephine County's function, we have our own timber program, you know, a logging program that helps fund parks and like I say,
schools,
the sheriff's office. And
yep.
I don't much, there's a little bit goes in schools, but most of it, you know, we try for law enforcement parks.
Way to include the extra folks in the room.
Yeah.
Got them both in that sense.
Well, I did. I saw. You don't think I didn't see them out there?
I guess you're pretty sly.
Taking care of the constituents, that's it. Next slide is a project we're working on with Equimore Horse Sanctuary, which is on Neal Creek, just south of Ashland. This was a facility sort of tagged by the Oregon Department of Agriculture as having maybe contributing some pretty substantial bacteria pollution problems to Neal Creek and Bear Creek. So we are working with them, with the Jackson Soil and Water Conservation District. What the landowner is getting out of this particular project is, first of all, they're getting the Oregon Department of Agriculture off their back.
It's a biggie.
Which is a biggie for them. But, you know, they're getting a lot of help with their manure management. There's a couple hundred horses on this facility. You can imagine the piles of manure that they generate. They're getting some help with their irrigation water management and their access roads. What we're getting out of it, as well as ODA and the SWCD, is reduction in bacteria and sedimentation.
Now, this
to the
is
creek.
It over in the Ashland area?
It's over near Ashland, yes.
Does
just,
this go, is this above the Ashland watershed, which is up on
this is
Dutchman's Peak, that area?
Correct. No, this is, it's...
this is down in the Bear?
It's down on
Bear
on
Creek.
Bear Creek.
Jeez,
yeah,
okay.
Pretty close to Highway 66.
Now, then here's another question I have to ask, because mm-hmm. when I was in third grade, they said, done this myself many times, if you had 100 yards of like a babbling brook, that the water you drank at the bottom of it was almost pure.
100 yards of a babbling brook.
A babbling brook, like over stones and gravel and...
Depends on what the water is at the top.
The source?
Right,
yeah.
So some of them, yeah.
But I'm looking at the expanse of the Rogue River, and I've often wanted to take a test as the water entered Grape Creek. Take a water sample of Grape Creek, because that's the last population other than some... lodges, but that's the last of population. So take it at Bear at Grave Creek
from the Rogue River,
and then zip on down to Paradise, where it comes out of Mule Creek Canyon and Blossom Bar, and take it again and find out what did Mother Nature do all by herself between that point and that point.
Yeah.
And just
she will clean up
some of it.
Well, that's what I want to know.
But
I want to know.
Won't clean up. Everything.
I don't ever expect it to, but I want to give Mother Nature a little bit of credit.
Oh, yeah.
We went through this, and I'll give you just a quick example, because they came to the city council and wanted, DEQ came in, and they wanted us to participate. You're going to do this, and you're going to do that. I said, where do you take your readings? And they said, Shady Cove and Robertson Bridge. And I said, and? And they said, well, then you're going to pay for that cleanup. I said, I'm not going to pay for what Bear Creek dumps in. And you don't have Bear Creek on your list. You don't have Medford's filtration plant, sewage treatment plant on your list, which is right on the Rogue River. The Rogue River's there. Gold Hill's there. I have creeks. I have the Applegate River with all of its agriculture out Applegate dumping into the Rogue River. And now you're going to tell me. Now, I can throw a quarter in at Shady Cove. I can read the date. By the time we suck out of the river out here to purify our water for our customers, it's the color of a cardboard box.
Yeah,
Something happened between Shady Cove and here, and we will take a water test at the upstream urban growth boundary of Grants Pass and the downstream urban growth boundary. If it's 1,000 here and 1,500 here, we'll deal with 500 of them.
Yeah.
But we're not going to deal with Bear Creek and Medford and Ashland and all of the people that dump into that waterhead ahead of us, and because we're the last city in line, it's our fault. And they didn't like that at all. I'm sorry, but that's just
no. But that's absolutely right. And Bear Creek's a biggie.
Yeah.
The other biggie
is
Little
Creek. Why isn't Bear Creek on the chart? That's a whole different subject.
Yeah.
That's I believe that.
Yeah.
this is story.
Little View Creek's another biggie. We're going to get to that, Commissioner DeYoung. We're going to hit that in a sec. No, you're good. I'm revising my 10 minutes, though.
Yes. That happens
around
here.
We're going to give you Commissioner Morgan's time, and that's substantial. So
I want to make sure we leave some time for the good folks behind us here. We do quite a bit of work on fish passage. Again, we're working directly with landowners and water right holders. We don't do anything that's going to affect the water right holder in a way that they don't want to get affected. We worked with 6 landowners over the course of 2018, trying to help them figure out how we can improve their infrastructure and allow fish to move up and downstream during all seasons of the year. That resulted in replacement of 2 gravel push-up dams with structures like you got in the picture there, which is a whole lot easier to operate and maintain irrigation system than having to build a push-up dam in the creek every spring and take it out every fall. We also help pipe a substantial chunk of this guy's canal so that his water management, more water gets to his fields. We're also working with 5 water right holders on a tributary to a diversion on Ashland Creek. We're going to be removing that structure and replacing it with, again, improved infrastructure for those water right holders. If everything goes right, we're going to be doing that work this summer, but we did the design work last year. Spent about $125,000 on those efforts last year. We do work directly on coho habitat. A lot of this stuff ends up being up on Forest Service and BLM lands on relatively small-sized streams. Not a ton of work in 2017, but you can see there all the sediment that was fresh dirt there on the floodplain after this past spring's storms.
Where'd it come from?
Yeah, it came from no. It came off of the landscape, and this was in the vicinity of the Miles fire. So there's a lot of sediment pouring off the hillside there, available to be sorted out on the floodplain. I'm going to head out. Sorry.
I was going to sit back there and just discreet.
Maybe it was a mistake to invite you forward. Sorry,
no, I appreciate your input.
Thanks for my 5 minutes worth of
you did. So this next slide is some planning efforts that we're wrapping up. You can see that's what Little Beet Creek does during storms.
Golly.
So that's your cardboard box right there, Commissioner DeYoung.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's Little Butte Creek coming into the road right upstream of Table Rock Road. So we are working directly with the City of Grants Pass, the City of Rogue River, and the Medford Water Commission on an Upper Rogue Source Water Protection plan that should be done October of this year. We wrapped up with the Medford Water Commission a water quality improvement plan for Little Butte Creek, so hopefully that will not look so bad in storms in coming years. Even more important than during storms is a ton of irrigation return water that's really hot and full of
sediment. Sure. Has the influx of the marijuana industry and their runoff, has that affected? Are you running any tests on what kind? Because they use pretty toxic chemicals
but they tend to convert from flood irrigation to drip, and so it still might be a big problem.
I've heard of them taking big tanks, stock tanks, and dumping nitrogen in and dumping all the stuff into it, stirring it all up, and then
they use a lot of rodenticide, strangely enough.
Right, and drip feed that stuff. Well, then it rains on those pots, and those pots leak, and that goes into the watershed.
Absolutely.
And I'm just wondering if there was any uptick in chemicals that you're seeing.
The jury's out on that. We are sort of looking at that with this Bear Creek Pesticide Stewardship Partnership, so that we may see something in the results from that.
Because I know we get beat up in our public works thing about using roadside pesticide or herbicide. Yeah. And boy, oh my God, you open up that can of worms. And
killing the planet.
What's the agriculture community.
But yet at the same time, you got the farmer right next door, the pot farmer, and he's dumping all kinds of stuff in there. But that's okay.
Yeah, no, it's not okay. So we'll see if we see something in that pesticide work. And again, that there's challenges with trying to find a lot of that stuff, but it should show up there. We're also working with the Wild Salmon Center and about 12 other agencies to develop a coho strategic action plan that's focused on the Rogue River upstream of the city of Rogue River, so it doesn't really affect you all here in Josephine County. And then we're working with some folks on some projects for the Bear Creek Greenway. Our hope with all those planning efforts, of course, is to gin up a bunch of actionable projects that we can work on. And we're thinking, the way the landscape looks right now, We should have about 100 or so new actions that we have to develop or try to develop hitting us towards the end of this year, which is a good thing.
Why did your expenses go up $200,000 from 17 to 18? Your income went up less than $70,000. Your expenses went up $200,000.
Yeah, mostly
more
projects.
Do you have a carryover when your income is at 844 and your expenses are 6? Do you have a carryover?
We do carry.
Okay.
Funding. We do carry funding over
beginning balance.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So where we don't spend, we're not balanced, right? We sometimes take in more than we spend. Sometimes we spend more than we take in.
Right.
That's mostly donations. Is when we have
the
extra
fluctuation.
Fluctuation. And some of it is just timing. Like we get foundation funding that doesn't get spent until the next year.
The lion's share of your income is off from the state.
Yeah,
second is local.
Yeah,
which is the line, local government.
It's not so much local. It's mostly local partners.
Okay, but individual would be your
individuals just, would be if you gave us $50.
Okay.
Yeah. That big switch in foundations, just in case you're interested, was that we had a foundation from the Sacramento area that gave us a bunch of money in 2017. We got that same money in 2018, but it ended up getting routed through one of our local partners. So it shows up in 2018 as a local. In 2017, it showed up as a foundation. So that may explain that. The biggest difference, our expenditures went up almost $200,000. 150 of that is contracted services. And that means either more or bigger on-the-ground projects. And we're trying to grow that contracted services part. That's money that goes back into local folks building our projects.
Okay.
And then just the last slide is here's some stuff that's coming up soon. We don't need to dwell on any of that. You can give it a look. We're desperately trying to get some stuff going on the ground stuff on Grave Creek and Wolf Creek. We are working with Josephine County Parks folks on some ideas at Wolf Creek Park in particular. And we've got a fish passage barrier on Wolf Creek that we're kind of talking to the landowners on. Nothing has moved forward yet, but we're talking with them on it.
Weekly business session tomorrow is in Wolf Creek, and we're looking for an exciting turnout up there.
Yeah. You probably will have it. Last parting shot, and then I'll let you guys ask questions if you have any more. There's just a little, we send these out monthly to folks that are kind of our friends. This is a little update of what we were up to in April. The May one is probably due to hit the streets this week. That's all I got. Thanks for your time. If you've got questions, I'm happy to answer them. I gave you a business card. If something comes up, I will get in touch with you and we'll go walk on Gilbert Creek.
See what you can find out about the little flags in Gilbert Creek.
I will try to figure that out.
Okay.
All right, you guys. Thanks for your time. Really
appreciate
it.
You bet. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, you bet.
All right. Take care, Brian.
You guys do the same. Thanks.
You betcha. All right, let's move on to item two, which is our forestry quarterly update.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Fine. Just going to rip through some things, some exciting things that we've been doing here since the last update. The big one is continued salvage operations on the Taylor Fire. Just kind of got started up here in the last couple weeks after the roads and everything dried up.
You had three sales that didn't get a bid. Are you putting those sales to?
Two that didn't get bids.
Are you going to put those back up again and try again or
we're
not?
We're not getting any interest in that volume.
Okay, all right. So what do we do with that?
Watch it
at
rot.
At this point, watch it melt. Yeah. We'll plant underneath of it for the next rotation, but we're not going to invest a bunch of money into removing it. That would be our desired effect so that we can get to the ground and whatnot, but it cost a tremendous amount of money to try and deal with that. So we'll probably look at planting under it and get the next rotation growing. And
can we... It's a stretch. Because that fire was not ours, and because that fire did not get put out like we all would have liked it to do, and it came in and wiped out, do we have a value on what that timber would have been had it gone to market?
We can come up with that value, and I did that right after the fire.
That'd just be a good number to have in the back of our mind when we have these discussions about he said, she said, and pointing fingers.
The effect on county land.
And the effect on local economies, including ours, of the fire that they said, well, no, we're going to let that burn because it's a good experiment, or this is part of our timber management is to let it burn. And then it gets away from them and burns our resources. It's just like when they say, your obligation is to save your home and make your home fire safe for 100 yards around it. And that's your obligation. That's what you need to do as a homeowner, to say what's yours.
Yeah.
Because you burn up 80 acres, a friend of mine up Pickett Creek, burned every stick on his 80 acres, and he's the one that stayed there and fought the fire to keep it from burning his house down. They were about ready to, you know, they were, he wanted to do it. They wanted him to evacuate. He said, nothing to it. I'll just stay here and perish. They got out to the St. Helens guy. But that was the thing. There was no, you know, I'm sorry about your whole moonscape that you get to live in for the rest of your life. But I didn't know if we placed the value on that.
We did, and I sent you guys some information soon after the fire on that. And if you take a look at the volume that we lost and the value that we sold volume just a few months prior to that. Now, markets fluctuate.
Sure,
if you just assume that had it not been burnt, you would have gotten the green price for it. In addition to, so reduced stumpage on what we did sell, in addition to what we didn't sell, amounted to in the $5 million range. That's just an immediate punch in the
area. And here again, just like to explain to Brian, that's money that goes to our local, to what we don't depend on it, but we sure does help pay the bills around here. That $5 million went down, is basically lost to Josephine County.
Yes.
That I'm sure all the departments that feed off of or
benefit from
the timber program.
Now, a couple of important facts to remember in terms of the Taylor fire was that we lost about 1,900 acres and some change, and during the time frame that we lost ours, it was still under the control of ODF. So after that, not too long after that, the fire basically spread out into Forest Service, and the fire was handed off to the Forest Service, and it turned into a Goliath after that point. But I don't think that we can blame the Forest Service management for what we directly lost.
Right.
You know, obviously, it was just a bad series of events. You know, we just had July 15th was a huge lightning bust. The state was basically overwhelmed at being able to respond at the lightning strikes that hit, and they got to the what they could. They got to the biggest ones as quickly as they could, and some of them.
And we can critique going back over that, but you know, what happened? I just want to say, you know, if somebody asks, I just need to have a number to put a value on it.
Yeah,
I think Simon used to say, you know, he used to blurt out a number, but I didn't know if he had any kind of documentation for that.
Are you playing Simon Says?
Yeah. The immediate impact was in the $5 million range, but the ongoing impact's going to be more now. We got to invest back into those lands.
I don't even. I give my phone number in generalities anymore because I get quoted all the time. So my phone number is something like, but I give this kind of generality.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Simon used to say that from time to time. And I didn't know where he got that number, but it sounds to me like at that particular time we had, because that's the number he said was $5 million. Yeah. It's just something that I was curious as to.
It hurts. It really takes our ability to manage the land
out
of our hands.
40 years or 50 years of growing
that's
gone, and you got to start all over again. We'll never see it.
Yeah. As I mentioned, you know, we're not getting much interest in the remaining salvage volume a little bit. We'll continue to pick at it as long as we can convince some of the facilities to take that volume. But it's going to be small in comparison. I think we're going to end up with around 7 million feet of harvested salvage volume by the time it's all said and done.
On Taylor alone?
Taylor alone, yes. Yeah. Which included, you know, all of our Pickett Creek ownership clear to the park at Indian Mary. There was, you know, a total of almost 2,000 acres in there. Some of the stuff that we're not able to salvage is still showing green right now. We're rubbing my bald head as a crystal ball and hoping that because we can't get to
it. You rubbed
it,
all the hair off.
I did. rubbed way too hard, too often. We're hoping that the bugs don't get into it and kill it off and we can actually keep it green and then maybe look at developing a road system into it in the future and have some areas that we can harvest. But that's just going to be a wait and see, unfortunately. We did not lay out and sell any green timber this spring because of the salvage. We will be back into the green timber sale program next spring in April. The plan is right now to sell 3 to 4 million feet at that time, which is kind of where we bump down to after the burn and the harvest that we have sold. So over our 10-year time frame, being in that 6.5 million average area. We're continuing to do inventory plots in-house out on the tree farm. That information all goes to a subcontractor that manages that data for us, ships us back a finished product that we can then use to look at individual stands and everything, tell us how much volume we do have. That's working out well, and we continue to build more and more data over time and get better accuracy out of it over time as well. Grants, I have an old FEMA grant out there. I think I've told you this a million times in the last 3 years, 4 years. There was two parts of it. One was a rehabilitation side of it, which ended up not getting done fast enough to have any impact on us. The other one's just a fuel reduction project. That is still going. It's on about 7 of our tracks that kind of butt right up against an urban interface where we go in along the edges of those tracks and do some fuel reduction to both.
How far do you go into our thing on fuel reduction?
It's variable, but between 200 and 600 feet, you know, follow a road, you know, the property line and maybe a road.
Is there any liability if, for instance, we didn't do that, we didn't manage the forest floor and it caught on fire and transferred over to private property through our
stuff,
like it is the other way around? If it goes from private property into Forest Service stuff, the property owner gets nailed for.
Yeah, if there's negligence there's always liability. You know, most of the biggest threat would be to our ownership from private property.
Okay, the other way around.
Citizen going out and maybe mowing his lawn during 105 degrees and a red flag warning and up the mountain, there would certainly be, you know, I think recourse against an individual that was negligent like that. You know, most of ours, if a fire starts on us, it would be during the course of an operations, and they would have firefighting ability on site. And then we also have the backup of ODF as well that we pay for every year. So I'm not really worried about our liability as much as, you know, buffering. If something did start on us, there's that buffer of it spreading onto private land. And right, there's also that buffer if it starts on private
land.
We're
at least taking a proactive approach to our side of the road.
Yes, that's exactly. We did get an Arbor Day grant, and we've actually been very successful and had a great partnership with the Arbor Day Foundation since I've gotten here. Almost every year we have gotten part of an Arbor Day grant. This year we got about $5,600 from them that we will invest in the seedlings and plant a tract that we weren't able to salvage. We'll apply for more for them.
Could you put a sign out there at that tract you replanted with Arbor Day funds?
Absolutely, we can. It has to be in conjunction with them, obviously, because of trademarking and whatnot.
But
the only problem is I would probably see it more than anybody. It's out of the middle of nowhere.
But I think, you know, Arbor Day is we were involved with it with the Urban Area Tree Committee, and they had Arbor Day and planted a tree. Every year they planted a tree either at a school or at one of our parks or whatnot. Yeah. That was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and we like to let everybody know that we can of the gratitude that we have for them helping us out, you know, especially in areas where we can't salvage and generate any revenue to rehabilitate those lands. It's great to have their partnership in that. The youth tree plant will be this year, February 6th, 7th, and 8th, almost always in that same time frame. We're doing prep work right now, opening up a spot for this year's plant. Everything is kind of cyclical at this point. It's been ongoing for over 30 years, so it's just kind of an automatic cruise control. All my guys know what to do to get ready for it, and in February we'll have a herding of the chickens and put number 31 behind us. Silviculture, we did put about 100,000 seedlings in the ground this spring. Most of that was interplanting some trouble areas that we had from the old Douglas complex, try to bring it up to an acceptable level so that we have trees in the future out there to harvest. We did kind of bump up our silviculture budget this year, mostly in response to the fire, the Taylor fire. We were aggressively out procuring any improved seed, and we were also picking improved seed out at Provo to try and get ready to grow seedlings and get those planted into the ground out on the Taylor fire.
Is it open season there to go pluck seeds?
It is. It'll probably be about September when we do it. We actually went out and stimulated Provolt this year. The BLM's kind of throwing their hands up in the air at Provolt,
kind of done
managing it as a seed orchard. But as a cooperator, we have rights to be able to go out and do that ourselves. So us in conjunction with Hancock, I believe, Olympic Resource Management, and maybe one or two others, went out and stimulated some of the orchards out there, which you kind of partially girdle the trees and stress them. And the tree goes, oh, crap, I need to produce some cones. So we did that this spring, and we're hoping it produces some cones this fall.
Where do you order a tree girdle? Is that on the forestry website?
A little chainsaw.
Victoria's like, oh, yes, I'd like to order a tree girdle.
What?
Yeah. And then we've been completing a few release projects, vegetation release projects out in the old burn as well. Nothing worth really bragging about. We've also, as a reminder, been moving forward some of our green sale programs that we sold previous to the Taylor fire also.
They're so still active?
Still active, yeah.
What do they get, 3 years or something to
basically it? 3 summers, so it's three about summers. 2.5 years. Okay. We sell them in April, so they get that summer following it, and then the next 2 years.
Oh, gotcha.
Typically on our contracts, and that gives purchasers the ability to kind of juggle that in their portfolio and then go get that volume when they need it.
Yeah, they can schedule it.
Yeah. I got two kind of small projects I'll just let you know about that are coming up because they will eventually need your guys' signature. Out on our Greenback Mine property, we neighbor private property, and there was an old triangle out there. This is the triangle. This is county property here, and then this is the neighbor here. The current meets and bounds description describe this triangle as this. And in 1901, the original description was this triangle. In the 1930s, when the property changed hands, somebody got dyslexia and described
it's exactly
it exactly opposite.
Yeah.
So we're trying to rectify this. I have a lot line adjustment in.
And their road goes across it?
Yeah, the road is right here. Yeah. And the intention was for this owner to keep control and ownership of the road. Sure. That's why they cut that.
I'm sure there's some topography that makes it make sense.
Where is this at? It's right next to the Greenback Mine.
Okay.
Off of Coyote Creek.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Placer. Off of Placer.
Placer.
Center of town.
So north.
But we own already all the way to the corner pin or not?
The way it is right now is we own everything except that triangle.
Okay.
But we are lot line adjustment to where we own everything but that triangle. So it's an equal change. It's just moving the triangle back to what it
was
originally.
Why did they carve that triangle off? Just because the road went through it and the guy wanted it?
Yeah, he wanted it.
There must be a valley there.
So this was all an active mine up until the 90s or 80s.
So that was their access.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And we have these people are great. We have good relationships with them.
Boy, now be the time to change that over, because if not, they're still on our property.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. And the interesting thing is while we have easement to use their roads, they don't have easement to use ours.
Right.
So right there, they don't have a legal right to use that as of right now.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to clean this up and rectify it, but because it is a land trade issue, that requires you guys. I
don't argue with that one at all.
The only other one I have is out on our Wolf Creek Tracks property, which is right out about where Lower Graves and Lower Wolf meet. Pacific Power would like to remove the lines that are out there on our property, which I'm in total agreement with. Currently, this is a picture of it. The current line starts here, maybe back just a little bit, and then goes right through the gut of the old burn, which has all been clear cut and salvaged since. So they're taking up a significant amount of acreage coming right through
here. What's
their
right away, 100 yards?
No, it's only about 20 or 30 feet. The problem is, because of the topography, in order to get to these poles, you can see the road system that they built, mm-hmm. and it takes all that ground under the lines out of production, along with all the roads to access the poles. Out of production, so they want to move this line over to where their poles are all right on the road.
Okay.
So that kind of takes it out of our area. Where
gives them better access
and move it up. But this will involve an easement that I'm involved with Pacific Power and Legal right now, getting that all.
Don't worry, we have a great relationship with them.
Yeah. And maybe more so when I get done keeping control of everything that I can possibly keep control of on this line. But all in all, this is a good deal. They've offered up some seedlings to help us rehabilitate some of this area.
Well, now, they're not going to rip that road out, are they? I mean, I better decommission that road, because I'd rather keep that road in there for access in the future.
Yeah, this one here won't do us. We're going to look at it, and the ones that will do us good for access in the future we'll keep. All of the side stuff, mm-hmm. we'll have them rip and we'll plant in for production. But anything that we need for access, we're going to keep open for sure.
Good.
That's the big projects that I have and all the pain that I can be today. I do have one question. I've kind of used the same format, just kind of come in with some of my highlights that I have. Is that working for you guys? Mm-hmm. Or?
Sure. I think so.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if there's anything,
look at your phone number.
Need to change. Right. Or, any questions?
No. Okay. No, sir.
When the phone calls start and everybody's mad at me for opening up the ground, then I don't remember my number.
We trust that you'll handle it well, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Looking to our agenda, item 3 is a Parks Quarterly Update. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
We're fine.
Good. Quarterly update. Finances. Parks doesn't need a supplemental budget. We're within our original scheduled budget, which is great. We're expected to have a carryover budget now of around $398,000.
Okay. What did you have last year?
What kind of percentage is that? Yeah, we'll both ask.
More than that. And so what it does is we were projected to eat into our carryover by $106,000, and now I'm estimating to bring that down to only a negative $34,000. So that's great. The reason we had to eat into our carryover fund this year is it's the first year that I've had to fully fund all work crews for parks, and I kept that at the same level of 2 times per week this year. Next year, I have to slash that majorly, but we're balancing the books as best as we can. We also have increasingly amount of park improvements, just small things we're doing here and there. So those are the two combinations as to why we were originally projected to have such a drastic eat into our carryover.
Right.
So it's not expected to continue, and next budget is fully balanced again.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, letter to the editor the other day said, why are you doing this when, you know, you're $700,000 behind on maintenance and so on and so forth? That isn't us, is it?
That was the city, yeah.
I think that was the
city.
Think it was us.
And I think it's easy to look at any individual department's budget and ask, why are you making this decision over that one? You can say that we make the... try to make the best decisions about safety and park usability as a whole, and then make small improvements, especially things that are going to affect revenue, so that we can continue to make improvements.
Right.
And so it's a balance. I'm always happy to have feedback. So we ask people to attend Parks Advisory Board meetings to let us know what needs to be improved. We do a survey every year to ask people what they want us to spend our money on. And then larger improvements, of course, require a lot of planning and grants, and
but
we are getting to those.
The grants and whatnot. And I appreciate. I just appreciate the fact you have carryover. I was just asking what the difference in the carryover was, and that's, you know, because you are in the constant effort to try to improve your system.
Yes.
That carryover is there to be used. I mean, to a certain extent. If you got $300K in a carryover, that's commendable. So
yeah, we only had I think 60,000 to 80,000 when I first started, and so we're in a good position, and we're going to try to keep it around this amount.
You know, we've got that. There's going to be some requirements on that remodel out there at Whitehorse, and I'm sure unforeseen things that are just going to pop up from time to time.
Always.
Well, and you'll have your handicap improvements over the next year or two.
True.
Yep,
yes, we've certainly taken care of all the small ones, but any of the large infrastructure stuff that is now out of compliance due to age of the facility, those take major planning and major grants.
And those,
certainly something we'll be working towards.
But those, can't we take those in, like, say, little bunches and say, I want a grant to do these upgrades?
Exactly.
Or
so I have...
from the handicap, whatever the handicap deal.
And some of those grandfather in, so we're not under the huge pressure to...
For instance, the Schroeder restroom shower unit was built at a time where it met standards. Due to the age of it now, yes, it needs to be replaced immediately, but it doesn't mean I have to do it today. We're certainly going to get to it as soon as we can.
Okay.
Yeah, and the transition plan will help with that once the coordinator's on board and we're able to work towards that as a county.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Okay, so also upcoming, just to piggyback off forestry, the Wolf Creek timber harvest is beginning. That was sold in 2015. It's not in the park itself, but it is on park's property. It's across the creek and up the entire side of the hill. It's a thinning project, a healthy thinning project. It's expected to bring in around $80,000 total, and that money goes right back into Wolf Creek Park. We've already started some capital improvement projects, such as last year we repaired the roofing on three of the buildings, and we are looking forward to replacing the footbridge, which has been washed out somewhere between 10 and 15 years now, as well as looking at demolishing two vault toilets and replacing one at the trailhead there. And if there's more money left over, if we're able to leverage grant funding, then we may continue to look at things like the playground or irrigation or other improvements.
I'm wondering if a quick handout or leaflet, if we're going tomorrow night, we're going to Wolf Creek, we're going to have a RWBS is up there. And it might be a good time to kind of break the news about a thinning project across the creek.
It has been talked about for the last 3 years. It's not a surprise to the core. However, I would not be surprised to find out that many people don't know about it.
Right.
I think a lot of people are immediately afraid it's a clear cut.
Sure.
And they're immediately wondering where the money's going.
And
so we piggyback those two things.
If we could say, you know, and the monies that that comes off of that
going right back in
are going to go right back into this facility. Yeah. Another thing is, we went up and visited that park. Is there an opportunity to thin that park out? My gosh, it's like Sherwood Forest in there.
Opportunity, yes. Identified need, absolutely. Time is our next factor. And so as soon as we can free up resources to do that, we will. Absolutely.
Okay. Some of that looks like pretty good sticks in
there.
Yes, yes. We need to remove poison oak and thin the trees as well. And so it's something we've been talking about. Do we buy a brush hog? How do we do that with the least cost possible?
Okay.
So absolutely. So if you'd like me to prepare handouts, I can certainly do that and have them brought over to the board. I just can't be there myself. I will be out of town.
We may not even use it, but it would be nice to have.
In case someone publicly
correct information.
In case it came up. But another thing is, do you partner with Public Works, because they have like chippers and stuff of that sort, when you need when you need something. That didn't show
up
on this.
We do a great job at partnering with each other, and Public Works goes out of their way to help us as much as possible. However, we are two different departments with two different funding streams.
Right.
So saying that, everything costs money. So
right.
Parks does everything that we can to use our dollar as best as possible every fiscal year.
Okay, rather than you go buy a chipper.
We own a chipper that we share with forestry.
And it's one of Public Works' old chippers that they...
We currently still have our original one, but the blades will not be replaced again when they're worn out. And yes, their old chipper that they were going to send to surplus, they went ahead and let us have. And so,
okay,
correct,
we
do have
one. We just bought one or two new chippers for the Public Works Department.
And,
I was wondering where the old ones went.
Mm-hmm, they auctioned one, and we got one.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Which was gracious of them. Much appreciated.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
They have a lot of expertise we're trying to tap more into,
mm-hmm.
and we're having those conversations with them, and they've been on board with as much information as they can give us.
Okay.
So, yes, they're great team players. Next on my list is just a reminder of White Horse Project is continual. Our permits are starting to be submitted. We're continuing to write grant applications. I'll be coming to you with an economic development request here in the near future.
Is that going to affect this year's tourist season or not?
Specifically,
probably start next fall?
Specifically, the project, if it can stay on track, will start this fall. We'll close the upper loop during winter, which
okay.
it does anyway. And if we can, we'd love to open it by Memorial Day of next year so that we get that peak camping
pretty
season.
Pretty good size lift, but try it.
We will see what happens.
Yeah.
You can aim high and then we'll
sure.
see what happens. White Horse Playground, we just completely installed and opened a new playground. We had removed the McDonald's playground back mid-November or mid-2016, and they donated a Playcraft structure. We had to pour a little bit of money in to get it up to standards, but the fill material just went in last weekend, and it's now open to the public, so that's
all
great.
Right.
Okay.
On that same note, the Chinook wooden playground structure has been demolished. It was just a small wooden thing that shook and rocked and didn't meet safety standards anymore, so it was taken out. It will not be replaced
yeah.
as that's a small boat ramp location.
Did that have some little Eagle Scout plaque on it or something?
The rumor goes that it did, but then somebody else told me it was another playground that was in that park. So I'm a little confused on the history. However, it certainly saw its useful life and was
sure.
appreciated while it lasted.
Perfect.
At this time with Chinook, we've entered a grant into Oregon State Marine Board to hopefully get in-kind work for them to study and engineer new plans for Chinook. And so
yeah,
it will hear...
the boat ramp.
Yeah, we'll
yeah.
hear in the next month if we were approved. They're meeting this coming Tuesday to make a final decision. And if so, we've just got to pay for permits and they'll do everything else. Survey points, see if there is a better location for the boat ramp, what that would look like, if the parking lot can be expanded and how much that would cost. So that's all in the works.
Okay. Excellent.
Perfect. For the first time since I've been here, we're looking to do a little bit of in-water work. We're going to start specifically with the Alameda boat ramp. Specifically, at the end of the Alameda boat ramp, there's now about a 5-foot divot. So if you drive your trailer too far out, you get into trouble. It's just the normal river's movement of sediment. So we've investigated permits, and it looks like two simple permits just to give us permission to use existing sediment to push it back into place with our backhoe. So we'll get through that process and hopefully be able to do that in the next few weeks.
Okay. Do you put big boulders or something in there at the bottom of the boat ramp and then fill it in with sediment, or just sediment?
So riprap is a normal thing that helps with the stuff not undermining in the beginning. With Almeda's, I'll have to look at it closer, but from memory, it doesn't have large riprap because it's already a large gravel pit.
Okay.
Somewhere else, like Indian Mary, has the riprap, but places like Innis Riffle and Griffin and Almeda typically don't because they're already a sand gravel bar. Yeah. So there's that one. The only other two things I have is I won't be at today's 2 o'clock meeting, but they will be bringing you documents to acknowledge the use of the new Lathrop property because we accepted Oregon
okay.
State Marine Board monies. It just states that property should only be used for boating for X amount of years.
Okay.
So we expected that to come through.
What's
but
the
that's,
X?
Yeah, it's the actual signature then.
Yeah, but what's the X amount of years?
Oh.
Is it 50 years? 100 years?
I believe it's either 30 or 50 off the top of my head.
Okay.
But
if we signed into that, this is one at Lathrop.
Yes.
If we signed into that and, say, for instance, a fourth bridge wanted to go across there, How is that to get? Is that to get out?
So we've already accepted the money with the understanding it would always be used for boating facilities. It doesn't mean that other activities can't happen on site.
We just
it's
have
just
to make
a
sure
conversation.
The boating activities. If we were to say, yeah, we're going to put a fourth bridge across, then this is just.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff. I just don't want to walk.
We have the property downstream. We could move the boat ramp too because it's at the end of
a ramp. We would have to provide
a
boat ramp in that.
We've just acquired an extra 7 acres. So Lathrop at this point was acquired, the additional 7 acres. In 5 years' time is when we expect to actually make improvements. So during that time, of course, there'll be some engineering and plans that are drafted. And during that conversation, we will make sure to include the city and talk about the potential bridge because it does need a sewer line to come under it, with that being the outlet, and just working that into the plans to make sure it doesn't impede on boating access.
And I'm going to assume that we could do this engineering study for where the boat ramp should be, and they may say, hey, that isn't a place for us.
Oh, 100%. And that's what the Oregon State Marine Board is great about. They have engineers in-house, and when
they
approve those grants.
Suggest at this time move it downstream because you own the property anyway.
Well, and even if it's not a vehicle bridge, they might put in a pedestrian bridge to get that sewer line across.
Yeah,
because
that's going to be heavily residential across the river is what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And access back to River Road Reserve if something ever happens there. I see it. Connection across there.
And so I did sit with the city Parks Head and just said, hey, future next 5 years, we should be thinking about this before it happens.
I just didn't want to lock us into something we couldn't get out of.
Right.
And that would be a hurdle to jump.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be here 30 years from now. But
yeah.
So I said, we want to put a footbridge across there. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You know, that's boating. We may not even have boats. It'll be a canoe deal by then.
Sure. But the alternative was to not buy the property and to let it be a private residence. So it was a good thing to acquire it.
It was a good thing to acquire the property. There's no doubt about that. I was never against that. So, okay.
Perfect. The only other note I wanted to put in is I know if you go down to Schroeder and go to the tent loop, it looks like all the trees are gone. There's a lot of trees gone. We removed close to 100 cottonwoods last year. There's 20 cottonwoods remaining at this time that we thought could last another year. We had another major branch fall from what appears to be a healthy tree. So upon further inspection, we are hoping in the next 1 month to remove the additional 20 cottonwood trees for the safety of all campers, and we have new trees being planted.
Do you chip those or what? Do they go over to biomass or something?
Cottonwood is a junk tree. Nobody wants it. We put a free sign on it and nobody would come and get it. So if anybody hears this and wants cottonwood, please and get it. We have a log deck right now already with about 60 trees sitting in it that we couldn't use. It's back up in what we call a boneyard, somewhere that will eventually burn stuff once the fire season ends. But with the 20 new ones coming out, if anybody wants cottonwood, please come and get it.
You can't, but that's not stove wood and that's not firewood.
It's very low-grade firewood, but if you don't have any other option, it does work as firewood. Typically, in my research, it's used for paper and paper products like toilet paper, but it's just partly worth trying.
How would you like to be in the tree community and just say, where are you going? Well, my future's in toilet paper.
Yeah, I think they can also use it for press.
Not even newspaper.
Yeah. We're going all the way to...
We tried to reach out to Murphy's to say, hey, if we truck it there, would you take it for free? And they...
And you can use a few chunks to do road blockage or parking blockage, but
we have used them as end caps to some locations to make sure people drive in the right areas. But the other problem is that it starts degrading. So if anybody needs it for fish habitat, they can have it for free.
For fish habitat, because
it won't
they just
last.
Degrade. Yeah, they don't last. Right. And then you have other issues.
Gosh, we had everybody in the room at once.
You had pine trees.
Write that down, Sean.
Exactly, yeah. So that concludes my update, unless you have questions.
Nope, much appreciated. Nice job, again, keeping our parks as beautiful as they are.
How's it working out with you doing your own reservations and stuff in-house?
We love it.
Credit cards there? That's working out.
No hesitation.
Good.
It essentially, McKenzie has about 50 to 75% of her time in winter to take care of other projects. So she's quickly become more of a project manager, is writing grants and taking care of some other things. In summer, we find that reservations probably take up about 80 to 90% of her time.
Good. That's a good thing.
But it's great.
Good.
Yeah.
Good
problem to have. It basically paid for her position, which gave us additional resources in-house. And
Nice.
It helps because half the calls we used to get during the summer was, do you have openings now? And questions about reservations. We'd tell them everything they need to know, and then they'd have to call another entity. We can just do it all in one fellow swoop now. So it's really helping us attend to locals as well as people traveling in to answer all their questions, promote tourism and things to do like the Hellgate rides. We keep them in our system instead of booking them in a state park or somewhere else since we only have these facilities available. We can do things now like when our full hookup sites are full. We now have at least 15 spots at Schroeder Tent Loop that can do dry camp and accommodate 60-foot RVs, which is something we turned away before. So it's a lot of great internal marketing, promotion, keeping revenue, and customer service.
How about sales on window stickers this year?
I haven't quite crunched it. The problem is those are annual passes for one calendar year, and our fiscal budget is offset by half. And so sometimes a number-by-number comparison, it just takes us time to crunch the numbers and get that report. So I haven't done that yet. But
right in the middle of summer season,
started.
Of course.
It. That went last year, and this goes next year.
But it looks like my stash of unsold passes is dwindling, which is great. Last year we had to do a reorder. Because we had sold out of everything that we had done. And this year, if we have to reorder, that'd be a great thing because we did order over 1,000 extra fixed passes.
Good.
So,
nice. What about your next volunteer day? Do you know that one offhand?
Oh, gosh, at the top of my hand, I don't. But they're all available on our website.
Sure.
co.josephine.or.us/volunteers. And you can sign up for any.
I was jealous. I went to the Dollar Mountain cleanup, which had Southern Oregon Trails help, and they had like 40 people show up. I was like, man, that is nice.
We will get there as we continue to build our program.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And this is our first year, and I think we're already getting well over a dozen showing up.
Yeah.
Which is great.
We did great.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Well, item four is liaison reports. Do you have anything to report, Mr. DM?
I went to Drive Pass Fairport board meeting, and they didn't have a quorum, but we had a lively discussion about all kinds of stuff, and they, you know, we were talking about mostly about Airport Days that's coming up this next weekend.
Yeah.
And so that bit, you know, it's going to hit in conjunction with the Medford cruise. I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff going on at this time of year, but I think it's going to be promising, going to be a real good deal over there. So, and I did it. Well, it's coming up. It'll be in this afternoon's legal counsel, the item 10A under executive session. So I won't say anything about it. But I've got. Oh, that'll be a report for this afternoon.
Well, and I was
let's see, fairgrounds. Fairgrounds went out there the other day. We had a discussion on how things were going with Love Abounds and Place.
Mm-hmm.
They're zeroing in on that, and I think we've got a really good, I think Place left here last time. I think we were very, very strong on explaining to them our sense of community and that we didn't need another park. We still needed the fairgrounds as a event center type thing, and luckily they are working with Love Abounds on the inner track. So they have a really good handle on what the footprint of the fairgrounds is. And then I think we were very positive on showing them what our vision, what the fair board's vision and the county's vision is for that particular system out there. And what they said, well, what about this land you want to sell off? And we just kind of carved that off and said, that's not really in Place's deal for the fairgrounds, because that will probably looks like it'll be repurposed into commercial ground. So
sure.
they were okay with that, and but they're going to come back. The roof, I did take a look at the roof on the arena out there. It's tan.
Instead
really
of white,
good.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
really
great.
Looked good. And they're just finishing that up. So that whole project went really, really smooth. I'm glad about that. And then I did talk to the schools, James Lowe at the schools the other day, about Redwood Elementary and the roof out there. And I think they're going to try, I don't know whether it's this summer, he's hoping this summer, to replace that roof. And I reminded him that we would like to have their panels when they come off of there. We may be able to repurpose those onto, like, the livestock barns. And the roof is failing on all those. It's a rolled, old roof, and the wind picks it up and rolls it up, and it's just, it rains harder inside the building than it does out. But we can use those panels, and we'll put down
to extend the life of that.
Oh yeah, we could put those panels up there, and if we have a drip every once in a while, it's a big deal in a classroom or in a building like this. But in that case, in those livestock barns, they have a little leaker here and there. It's not that big a deal compared to what we have now. So that looks promising, and I hope that all comes to pass. So that's all I have for liaison reports. Forestry, I called all my departments yesterday. Even the sheriff had a quiet weekend, which was good.
Yeah, that's nice, too.
So it's good to hear from all the departments, you know, that they had a, you know, for some reason, this last week seemed to be pretty calm through all of my departments.
Nice for them to get a break.
Public Works is, we're finishing up the, Rob Brandis is getting away from herbicide. He's doing, we've got a new herbicide that's EPA approved, and he's testing that right now to see how it works. We got in a deal from Mr. Jackson out in Williams that they cleared 7 miles of road.
Yeah.
Of roadside vegetation. And it seemed to me when, you know, Rob responded with, well, gee, our chain flail could have done that in X number, you know, we can do 20 miles a day instead of 7 miles a day. And I said, I don't think our argument has ever been about roadside vegetation with the mowing and chain flail. It's always been the herbicide side of it.
Right, right.
So maybe if we can get the herbicide thing, an agreement on the herbicide thing, we can move forward and where everybody's happy and they're not, gee, don't touch my stuff because I don't want herbicide.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay, can we flail it? Can we defoliate with, you know, devegetate it with by mowing it? Actual removal. So we'll see. He's working on that. I'm glad that everybody was in the room when we had that meeting. And, you know, I think it's moving forward. I think we're going to come out with a pretty good product. Maybe not this summer, but by next summer, maybe we'll have an agreement
there. Yeah, I think this is the year where you talk about it and try a few things, but
yeah,
hopefully
exactly.
There'll
be
a program.
We don't have any, we say, yeah, we're going to quit doing that, but we're going to do this, and you find out this doesn't work. We have to leave that open.
And that'll really make our outlying communities happy, I think, because then it can be a county-wide policy.
We go to Cave Junction, they got the same thing up to Kilmer. We had Kate Dwyer.
Same thing in Williams.
We had a meeting here a while back. Very productive, and it actually cut some roadside vegetation out of Public Works's. They don't have to do it anymore, and so that was kind of a good deal too.
Sure. Well, and I went up to AOC yesterday, the Association of Oregon Counties, and there's been a little bit of softening on the cap and trade.
Yeah, I heard that. I read a little bit about that in the paper.
They made promises at the beginning that they will do something this year, but they're really having some trouble corralling the last of the information and getting so many exceptions that they're worried about the overall effectiveness of it. And so it may fold over the next year. Some of them made promises they'd do something this year, so some form may still pass this year. They also backed off on the diesel engine requirements and moved it back to 2007 instead of 2010 and said it didn't have to happen until 2025. And they even talked about exempting rural communities and having it in the tri-county area up north.
If you do air quality testing, and this would be something you could ask at that because you're involved more in the AOC than I am. I thought about this on the way to work because they were talking about this. Boy, the cities say this and the cities say this. And said, urban areas have a tendency they have a problem, and their idea of fixing the problem is to make you in the rural community follow their new rules, and yet they don't do anything locally. It seems like it's always the rural people's fault for an urban problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take air quality in the urban side of it, and then you go out and tell the people in Sands Valley that you can't run that tractor because you're polluting out here, whereas, you know, you get out it's a saturation rate. It's all here. And I think that's something that New York, you know, oh my gosh, the whole rest of the world needs to pay attention because New York has a carbon footprint, but I see steam coming out of the top of every one of their buildings all day long, mm-hmm. and out of the manholes and so on and so forth. So I think that's something that that would be really interesting to see.
It would be. Well, and like my fellow commissioner from Lake County, they just bought the newest piece of equipment, a fire truck that they own, and it's a 2004. That's the newest large piece of equipment they have.
You ever go to Lakeview?
And I haven't.
I love that place. It's,
I haven't made it that far yet.
I have a lot of good friends at Lakeview.
I'm amazed at how far Oregon goes after you get past that.
You need to go. You need to
Bend Klamath Falls corridor.
Denier Junction, I'm telling you.
But I think that's being more reasonable and thoughtful. And then making the requirements on rural further out, you know, saying you guys at least head the right direction. Right. And they the money that they make from a lot of those fines and fees is going to go help some of those smaller communities do the replacement of those vehicles. So I think it's the right idea in the long run. It's just you got to be careful how quick you try and get somewhere.
Well, and like I say, you go out in Lakeview and you test the air in Lakeview, and there's nothing there that applies to the city.
Pristine.
You test 6th and Broadway and Burnside in Portland, and you get one reading. And then you go get that one, and that one out there, there is nothing out there that you have a bucket full of here. Yeah. So make me go out and buy a brand new tractor to harvest my crops, because you can't do anything about what you're doing.
Well, and then you can work out the kinks of those new laws where the municipalities have more money.
When you've done your backyard, come and see us about ours.
Exactly. I like that kind of a little more thoughtfulness.
Yeah,
so.
That's good. That's good news.
Other than that, I have nothing else to report.
Pam, and I don't know if we've received anything on it. I couldn't find anything on my emails, but she said chatter on the internet is that we're going to have two major power outages here, scheduled power outages in Grants Pass.
Haven't heard
anything. One's for 8 hours and one's for like another 12 hours at night. They're bringing a new line in here. I don't know of a substation that I know. I know there's a huge power transmission thing going on over in Klamath Falls, but it is nowhere near.
Yeah, us. So I'm surprised we haven't received some sort of notice to inform our citizens.
This is just coming across the...
Maybe the newspaper could do some investigating.
Have you heard anything about that, Sean?
Say that again.
What? You weren't paying attention? Put that phone away. A scheduled power outage.
That I have not heard.
Okay, because it was like for 8 hours one day.
Actually, my boss was talking about a power outage to a couple of the managers at the paper today. And saying how that was weird and something like scary or something.
Well, it was like it said 6,600...
Customers
in Grants Pass would be affected, that they were going to bring in another line or something, or they were
replace a line or something.
Looking up a line, but I haven't heard anything big.
Publisher of the Daily Courier might have more, or the power company.
But you know, I was just something I did. I want to make sure that all of our backup for our backup generator, I think, runs off natural gas here.
Right.
So that the 911 center and dispatch and everything are all.
But all the people out in the county that are on propane need to. You might want to be topping off your tanks,
right? For
for fire season end,
you're going to have to run your if you have a diesel generator. You know, sometimes they'll go on for a day or two, but just something to be a good time to test it out.
Well, I guess they had a scheduled outage in Northern California where they de-energized some lines because they were concerned about wind and the fire danger associated with that. So. That is a new policy that is a little interesting.
Yeah, that one bothers me.
I think we'll have an Oregon conversation sometime in the near future.
Yes.
All right, well, if there's nothing else for the order, sir, I'll go ahead and end this meeting at 10:23.
See you this afternoon.